Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line. I know a lot of you already have, but make sure you save that number, 331-979-1369, in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Hit us up with all of your free agency reaction. It's been a crazy, crazy, crazy 24 hours here. And Matt, we are back to just talk specifically about the Bulls. So we're going to split this up into two episodes. I imagine me and Matt could probably go north of 3 hours just talking about everything that has happened over the last 24 hours. So for content-wise and organization-wise here, we're going to stick to just what the Bulls did to today's episode. And then tomorrow, you guys will have a special episode where we'll go across the league and then update you, too, if anything else tends to happen from now and until the morning. But Matt, how are you? Welcome back from the weekend. Were you just as enthralled with everything that went down in the NBA last night as I was?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Man, I've been waiting all day to talk to you, buddy. I'm so excited. Look, there is nothing better than the first few hours of NBA free agency. It always tops itself. You never think that NBA free agency can get cooler as an off-season thing, this giant event that happens, and every year they outdo themselves. Not only with KD and Kyrie going to Brooklyn, and we can talk about more about that kind of stuff for tomorrow's episode, but just so much fun. I mean, it is truly, like, there's nothing in professional sports in this country that is as exciting of a thing that is not an actual sporting event happening than NBA free agency in the first 12 hours or so. And as far as what the Bulls did, I know that some of those swing for the fences fans were disappointed that Brogdon didn't happen. They didn't get involved in any kind of D'Angelo Russell moves, at least that we heard of realistically. But to me, the two moves that they made, one last night and then one earlier this morning, made perfect sense based on not only what John Paxson told us they were going to do, but what this team needs. So, yes, it's kind of like a keep your expectations low and you'll be pleased instead of disappointed kind of element. But to me, Thaddeus Young and Thomas Satoransky, and we'll break down everything that they can bring to this team, are exactly the kind of things that they told us that they were going to go out and get and the kind of things that this team needs.
Yeah, I was actually really, really pleased with what the Bulls have done so far. And waking up this morning to that alert from Woj about them making a sign-in trade, I was a little bit worried at first. I was like, what are they giving up for Satoransky?
Right.
And don't, you know, we fooled the Wizards once. I don't think that they were going to get fooled again, but they did. So that was good. And the Bulls didn't have to give up much for Satoransky. And that was a guy that you and I talked about during the season a handful of times. And I remember more specifically right after the trade deadline talking about him. And we, you know, we didn't even really mention him over the last couple of months just because I thought it was a sure bet that he was going back to the Wizards.
Right.
And I guess plans changed. I'm very excited about both guys.
And yeah, like you said, it was not exactly one of the more realistic options. You know, I was doing a free agency special last night with Mark and Kendall at NBC, and Satoransky was the name at the top of Mark Schanowski's wish list for potential backcourt free agent ads for the Bulls, but said that it wasn't really all that realistic because he didn't think that the Wizards were going to let Satoransky go, that they were going to do everything that they could to keep him. And like you, when I found out the way that the deal was getting done, a 3-year, $30 million sign-in trade where basically, like, the Bulls didn't even really sacrifice any picks. All they did was, like, give up swap rights for second rounders a few times in the future, and then also had some protections of a second round pick lifted from back when they made the Otto trade a few months ago. So to me, to get a guy like Satoransky, who is, you know, in so many ways a versatile guy that this roster can really use in a lot of ways, and I think is going to come in and be this team's starting point guard ahead of Kobe White and Chris Dunn, if Chris Dunn is even still here when we reach basketball in October again. To me, like, it's a great value deal, especially when you look at some of the money the other point guards around the league were getting. Like, the big name we kept hearing because of the connection with Boylan in San Antonio was Corey Joseph. They ended up taking a different guy away from that Pacers team. But, I mean, Corey Joseph got $337.
That's dumb money.
Like, Satoransky for $330 and swapping a couple second rounders is a much better deal, in my opinion.
So, to me, and just because you brought up Corey Joseph, the biggest shock that I had just across the league right when it started was the amount of money the point guards were getting. It was ridiculous. It was like anybody and everybody was willing to just pull their wallet out and basically write a blank check for every point guard. Look at what Terry Rozier got. Look at what Rubio got. Look at what Malcolm Brogdon got.
Oh, my, yeah.
Ish Smith got a pretty decent amount of money.
Rozier got more guaranteed money from Charlotte than they ever gave to Kemba freaking Walker. It's insane. It is. And, you know, Rubio was another popular name among Bulls fans as an option. I mean, some liked him, some didn't. But just as far as, like, frequency of names being dropped, Rubio was always up there. The Suns gave him more than $50 million.
That's wild. I just couldn't even believe that. Shout out to a longtime follower, Kofi, who works for SB Nation. He tweeted out the funniest thing I saw on Twitter, just from across from NBA Twitter last night. It was somebody in the front office of the Hornets. He was like, if we don't spend the money and give Kemba everything he wants, he's going to leave. And then it was just like Michael Jordan. It was Tyler, the Creator's video of just him staring going, okay. And that's perfect encapsulation of what Michael Jordan thinks of, you know, keeping his guys around. And they spent their money really weird too. But yeah, the Hornets we'll get to tomorrow. But just to kind of circle it back and bring it back to Satoransky, let's start with him and then let's talk about Thaddeus Young. For Satoransky, man, 3 years and $30 million to get him at $10 million apiece when you really all you need is that bridge point guard at this point to figure out kind of what Kobe White's going to be over the next couple of years. Certainly better than overpaying Rubio, overpaying Rozier, overpaying Brogdon. I wouldn't mind if they spent the money that they did, that the Clippers did to sign Patrick Beverley, but that didn't happen either. So this was best case scenario, at least in my opinion, and coming from the perspective again that we knew what the Bulls were going to do. They weren't going to make any type of sneaky big time splash, and we knew that coming into free agency. If you knew that, you should be pleasantly surprised with them acquiring Thomas Satoransky.
Yeah, and to me, it's not only a guy who at, you know, 27 going on 28 years old is going to be immediately one of the elder statesmen of this very young squad and provide some more leadership. I also, somebody on Bulls Twitter found a great Ringer column that was written about Satoransky earlier this season when everything in D.C. was just absolutely exploding. Shit was hitting the fan, and that Satoransky was the one guy holding everything together. They even used the phrase glue guy, which, you know, our old friend Tibbs, we know very much how important those kind of guys are for NBA teams. So Satoransky is going to be a guy who doesn't rub anybody the wrong way and is going to lead by example. He also, like Thaddeus Young, who we'll get to later, is a durable guy. He played 80 of 82 this past season, and the two games he missed was because of paternity leave, because he had a kid. The season before that, he played 73. Most of what Paxson talked about when it comes to knocking Chris Dunn is the lack of availability. Like, you can't impress us if you're not on the court. And yeah, it sucks, and it's not always the player's fault when you get hurt. But if you're hurt and you're not on the court, then you can't be useful to the team. So I think Satoransky, what?
Isn't that the sad thing, though? Like, as soon as Thaddeus Young got signed, I think 3 or 4 text messages into our text and voicemail line, plus the tweets at Locked On Bulls, were like, well, isn't this awesome that, like, Thaddeus Young played all 82 games the last two seasons? Like, really? That's where we're setting the bar right now for free agents is how many games that they played?
For a team that chucked a bunch of G League guys out there for, like, the better part of 2 months, like, yeah, it's kind of a joke to say, wow, we're so pleased with this guy because he's a basketball player who plays basketball instead of sitting on the bench with a cast on a various body part not playing basketball. Yeah, you can laugh at that. But guess what? You know what this team needs? Durable, healthy players. because we haven't had any in the last several seasons.
That is so true.
You can't get a rebuild off the floor if everybody is lying down on the floor, incapable of playing basketball. But to me, like the other thing that I really like about Satoransky is this. He's going to come in and be this team's starting point guard. Should be, in my opinion. Kobe White, they're not going to throw him in the deep end right away. They're going to use him as a microwave, play fast, up-tempo point guard coming off the bench in that second unit. Satoransky can be very efficient without needing the ball all the time, which is what we always have been talking about, what this team needs, because you got to let Zach LaVine get his touches. You got to let Markkanen get his shots. You got to now let Otto Porter Jr. find his open shots. And Satoransky has a 3.7 assist-to-turnover ratio, which is exponentially better than Chris Dunn's, and he has a usage percentage of like not even 14% last season as a starter. In the 54 games he started with Washington, he had a 14 usage percentage, which is exactly what this team needs. When he does shoot, he's efficient. True shooting percentage of 59 last season, 61.5 the season before that. He shoots threes at a 40% clip, and he just can do it when the opportunities present themselves. And it's a versatile guy who can play off the ball at times in this multi-ball handler system that we're expecting to see when Zach LaVine wants to be the dominant player on the court, when Markkanen wants to be the dominant player on the court. Satoransky at 6'7 can play 1, 2, and 3, and he doesn't need the ball to be effective. It's exactly what this roster needed.
Shout out to cleaningtheglass.com because they give me a stat here that is an assist, instead of assist to turnover ratio, it's an assist to usage ratio. And the definition of it is assist rate compared to usage rate. How often did a player get an assist given how much they had the ball in their hands? This is really interesting with talking about Thomas Satoransky because the 3 years he's been in the NBA, he's in the 85th percentile in his rookie year at 1.29, 96th in 2017-2018, and last season at 1.46 in the 91st percentile for point guards at his position, so and guards overall. So that's pretty damn good. And that's exactly what the Bulls need, right? We need somebody who's going to, when they have the ball in their hands, they're going to look for other options as opposed to score first. And you have Kobe White to develop there, and he's more of the score-first type of point guard. So you can deal with Thomas Satoransky not necessarily being like an above average offensive player, but having him and his ability to switch between the one and the two, I think, is going to be massive. I love the fact that they did that because we talked about that with Brogdon, Matt. We talked about Zach LaVine and Malcolm Brogdon being able to switch positions and kind of not having to be the focal point guard like a Derek Collison would have been if he came here and signed. So I'm very, very right. happy that they went out and a guy that can be a combo guard for them.
And I mean, just thinking about even further his versatility, based on what this Bulls roster was this past season and even just a couple seasons ago, where it's just like, all right, well, this guy is this position and this guy's this position. We always talk about this league becoming more of a positionless game and having guys who can play and defend multiple positions being so valuable. You know, Satoransky's not a great defender. I'd say he was probably about an average defender, but he does have that great length for a guy at his position. And you could very well see some times this coming season where you're looking at a lineup of Kobe White, Zach LaVine, Satoransky, Otto at the four, Lowry at the five. Like, I don't love thinking about the defense that unit would play, but oh my God, that unit would get buckets.
The length of that unit, too, is what's going to be really fun to watch. You know, talking about Satoransky at 6'7", Zach LaVine at, 6'5", Otto Porter Jr. at 6'8", Lowry Markkanen at 7 feet, and then Carter at 6'11 or 7 feet. So tons and tons of length in that starting unit, which I also really like about this. So to me, I think that this deal was perfect in terms of what the Bulls needed to do. And the capper of it all is what you brought up at the beginning, was the fact that they didn't really give up anything. They didn't give anything up that was going to be of worthwhile to them, at least in the immediate future. A couple pick swaps. I think one was with either the Lakers or the Memphis when they traded away that pick. Also, too, it was the worst of the two picks between their Grizzlies second round pick next year and one that the Wizards had, which isn't the way the Bulls evaluate and value second round picks, not that big of a deal. So definitely for the Bulls to go out and pick apart other deals and be a little bit creative here, good for them instead of overpaying for a guy that they didn't truly fall in love with.
Exactly. And you know, the other key to me where it's like, okay, give credit where credit is due, parentheses, I'm still not sold on this front office, getting this team back to championship contention. But again, credit where it's due. We kept talking about all of these names that were the names that kept, you know, coming up as far as most likely targets, They're going to sign Corey Joseph and Taj Gibson. They're going to do this predictable thing and that predictable thing. While Satoransky and Thaddeus Young in their own rights might also be considered to be underwhelming free agent additions to some of those Bulls fans who, sorry to burst your bubble, were in denial thinking that they were going after the big name stars of the league this summer, they totally surprised us. Like, we talked about Satoransky because he'd be a great fit, but we heard nothing about the Bulls pursuing him. Thaddeus Young, I don't even know if we ever talked about him because we never realistically thought that he was on the Bulls' radar. I know he is a big, you know, Doug Collins is a big fan. Doug Collins coached Thaddeus Young earlier in Young's career. So I'm guessing that that's where they got the nod to go get Thaddeus Young is senior advisor Doug Collins. Hey, we maybe figured out something that Doug Collins did in this weird front office position that's super vague and confusing to the fan base. So to me, the fact that the Bulls didn't show their cards, they didn't show their hand, and you know, I know you were talking earlier with our pal Tony Gill on No Zones about how he thought that maybe John Paxson had a knowing smirk on his face when asked about free agency when they were introducing their rookies, and maybe that meant that they really were going to swing for the fences and had something up their sleeve. Well, they had something up their sleeve, but it was the fact that they had their targets, as John Paxson told us. They had the plan worked out, and they went out and signed Satoransky and Thaddeus Young without anyone knowing about
the nice thing too about both of these guys, Thaddeus Young and Thomas Satoransky, is the fact that there is some flexibility with those third years. Both guys signed 3-year deals, and so there's some flexibility there if the Bulls still want to open up that cap space 2 years from now, which stays in line with Otto Porter's contract. And even if they keep those guys around, it kind of lines up more with Zach LaVine's contract. And it's hard to kind of project where this Bulls team is going to be 3 years down the road. But at least they have a little bit of maneuverability in terms of they're not going to be here for 3 full years. So if they want to change things up, or if they feel like that they can go out and take another step and maybe they want to attack a future star, it's going to be available either in 2021 or 2022. They have the flexibility to be able to do that. But the biggest thing here is, and we'll get to Thaddeus Young, but just the biggest thing in terms of overall picture of this is I think that they did this not only to get their vets to that they need guys that are going to be able to come in and help them win games, but you need to be able to showcase yourself as a Bulls team who is young and has some dysfunction over the last few years. You need to showcase at least to start that your team is consistent, it's about winning, and have some type of positive perception out there for this fan base. You know, we talk about perception is reality a lot this past season, and I think that's where it starts with these veterans. It starts with Thomas Satoransky and Thaddeus Young and actually going out there and showing that this is a capable roster of winning games and not throwing G Leaguers out there for the last 2 months of every season. So right. I think that's where it starts.
Yeah, and that's why I just could not understand the Bulls fans who were upset when, you know, they figured out that we signed these two guys instead of Brogdon or D'Angelo Russell or even some Bulls fans. Like, I saw Wyland Sylvie put up a poll that was like, hey, you know, did the Bulls get it right in free agency? And it was still like close to 60% no's on the vote. And then so many comments being like, did they get a meeting with Kevin Durant? No, then they failed. Did they get Kawhi Leonard? No, then they failed. All right, fucking wake up, people. What world do you live in? Based on the reality of the situation and what the Bulls roster needed to take the next step, they made accurate signings that will help the team take a step towards being a respectable organization again that can actually lure big-name free agents a year or two down the road. And that's what this is all about. As you said, Jordan, and to me, that's the only part that I don't love about the Satoransky and Young signings is that they're 3 years instead of two. But again, hopefully there are some non-guaranteed flexibilities with that, with the third year for both of these contracts, as we've heard. But to me, you're not luring stars here. We all know that it's like, oh, Chicago's cold. That's already a big minus for free agents that want to go play in Miami or a Texas town or Southern California. So there's that, and there's the whole perception is reality thing, and that this team had a near player mutiny when the new coach took over and was making them do push-ups and wind sprints. That's just stuff that players talk about, and other NBA players paying attention in other cities and on other teams saw that and laughed at that. And yes, they were trotting out G League guys. Yes, this team had a lot of injuries to deal with this past season. They won 22 games. You can talk all day about the different reasons that they won 22 games. And you could talk about, well, they have these promising young stars, Markkanen, Levine, we're high on Wendell, whatever. If you are a super max kind of free agent in this league, a superstar talent looking for a max deal to go play and win somewhere, and you see a Bulls team that is coming off of 22 wins, who in their right fucking mind thought it was somewhere even semi-close to realistic that the Bulls were getting meetings with the top-tier list of free agents this summer? You're delusional.
We told people this back at the trade deadline, right? Like we said, like when they made this move for Otto Porter, don't expect anything for the next couple of years. Anything big unless it comes in a trade. And obviously, they're not getting meetings with any of these guys. We basically knew where a lot of these top free agents were going before it even happened. We knew this weeks ago. So any Bulls fan that's upset that they didn't get a meeting with Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, and I understand, believe me, I get it. I understand the mentality of, well, really, you're just going to buy into the fact that they're just not going to get any free agents. So we're not even going to try. I was there with you before the trade deadline. I get that. I was pissed that the Bulls weren't going to find a way to get meetings, and they should at least be able to get meetings with these guys if they have the cap space. But we knew that once you don't even have the money to do it. So of course they're not going to get these top free agents to come in for meetings. It starts with winning. Like winning and money say a lot to players, especially caliber of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving or any of these other stars that signed. That's where it starts, is being not only consistent, functional, but not having any disaster or chaos go on. And the Bulls have had something happen every single year for the past, what, 3 or 4 years? There's been some type of blow-up that's been negative to the national media. So that doesn't look good. And believe me, players talk around the league. We talked about this in December, too, when Fred Hoiberg was fired and then Boylan ended up enduring that 56-point loss. Like, we talked about all of this. So any Bulls fan that's shocked that they didn't get meetings or they didn't even talk to any of the top free agents, I mean, I don't know what world they're living in.
Well, and not even just shocked, but still just like, cynically disappointed. Because maybe the people who are still, just rubbing it in the face and saying, hashtag fire guard packs, they didn't get a meeting with Kevin Durant. Maybe they're not surprised that it didn't happen, but they still feel like in some world that they live in that they should have, or they should have tried. And it's like, well, why exhaust yourselves going after something that is in no way a reality? If you want to get your team back towards a respectable organization that has some exciting young pieces that need to learn how to win and take those steps, then you add some quality veteran pieces around them. You might overpay those veteran role players a little bit, as they, I think, did just a touch with Satoransky, and maybe a bit more so of an overpay on Thaddeus Young. But if they play their roles and are there to help the young guys that we are hoping turn into stars, that's the step that the Bulls have to take to actually be a realistic destination in free agency for the big guys to come say, I want to play with Lauri Markkanen, or I want to play with Zach LaVine. But you can't skip that big step in the middle and assume that the Bulls were going to be talking to those big stars this summer. It's ridiculous.
Let's move on to Thaddeus Young. So we touched on Thomas Satoransky, but let's talk about Thaddeus Young. Very surprised by this move at first when I saw it come across my timeline. Like you had just mentioned before, like we didn't even talk about Thaddeus Young as being a potential option. It seemed kind of clear that the Pacers were going to try and bring him back. If not, he was going to have other suitors. But then we got the idea that not only did guys like any position that was at a stretch four was pretty much at a premium. You look at guys like Julius Randle or Bobby Portis, the amount of money that those guys were getting paid, and those guys went off the board relatively quickly. So for me, I'm actually pleased with Thaddeus Young and what he's going to be able to bring to this Bulls team. I'm not expecting a whole lot, though. Like, in terms of his rebounding ability, it's not all that great, but you have other young players around there. It's more about the flexibility of you can move him to different positions. He's going to be comfortable there. Also, too, the one thing that the Bulls lost that I thought was the biggest loss of it all was Robin Lopez, in terms of his, like, just being able to keep the locker room fun, but also being one of those glue pieces in terms of keeping everybody together and nothing being blown up. With him going to Milwaukee, You needed that guy, and the Bulls were looking for it, and I think that they got it in Thaddeus Young. Just from everything I'm hearing from people that cover the Pacers, just to seeing it across the timeline, a lot of Pacers fans were really sad that he left, and I think that was it starts with him being sort of that glue guy, not just in the locker room, but on the floor too. What do you think about Thaddeus Young, though?
I mean, yeah, the Bulls probably paid a little bit more than he's worth. You know, 3 years, 41 is a lot for a guy who's coming into this coming season at age 31 and is essentially going to be playing a bench role. Because, you know, that's to me the other interesting part about this is that, I mean, you go back and look at Young's recent track record as a player in Indianapolis and even in Brooklyn before that. 73 games played, 73 starts. 74 games played, 74 starts. 81, 81 starts. 81, 81 starts. And he's going to be coming off the bench. You know, everything is open in training camp competition, et cetera, et cetera. But we expect right now, based on what happened last night and this morning, that this team's starting five is likely going to be Satoransky and LaVine in the backcourt, Otto at the three, Lowry at the four, Wendell at the five. We know that the Bulls are really gearing towards trying to play more minutes with Markkanen at the five with some small ball stuff. You probably can see, you know, Young and Markkanen playing in the front court together. You're probably going to see moments where Otto's playing the four instead of the three, et cetera, et cetera. But to me, it's about the veteran leadership and everything that he brings in that regard. It is the toughness that Paxson kept talking about, and you can roll your eyes and laugh if you want to. But some of the things that you hear Thaddeus Young talking about as a veteran who's saying, hey, man, you know, I'm getting up there. I've been in the league a long time, but unless I can't walk, I'm out there playing. Maybe the Bulls really want a veteran like that to rub off on Markkanen and LaVine and Wendell because they think that their young stars have potential, but they need to toughen up a bit. You know, I don't think it's completely silly and only a joke about Boylan and his trigger words when you talk about something like that. I think part of it is legitimate, and that's a big reason why they brought Thaddeus Young in. And you're right, he's not like a great rebounder, particularly on the defensive end. He is fairly active on the offensive glass. He's averaged 2 offensive rebounds per game over the course of his career, including 2.3 and 2.4 his most 2 recent seasons with the Pacers. And to me, the other key with his game and his strengths on the defensive side, and you talk about him being a quality two-way player, for a guy at his position or positions, when you're talking about forwards and bigs, he averages 1.5 steals a game over his career. You go look at some of the other people who are comparable to Thaddeus Young in size and stature and positions they play on the court. There aren't that many bigs in the NBA averaging 1.5 steals per game.
Yeah, he's in the 96th percentile in steal percentage last season, and he has been there for the last 3 seasons. And then before that, he was in the 95th percentile the previous 2 seasons. So realistically, what I'm saying here is, like you said, elite level guy in terms of defense and being the ability to steal the ball. Looking at his rebounding, though, that might be the biggest weakness to his game, is he's going to be able to get buckets when you need him. Dude, that's kind of a professional scorer at this point in his career. But the rebounding would be like the only concern that I would have with him. And coming with that second unit, especially if you're going to play him and Gafford at the same time for a decent amount of minutes, hopefully Gafford at least is your guy that's going to come in and grab rebounds right away and can be the focal point of doing that. And same thing with Chandler Hutchison, if he's going to be a part of that second unit as well. That was a big strength that we talked about of Hutchison's game, not only coming out of the draft, but even last season, talked about his ability to go up and get boards, not only on the offensive side, but the defensive side as well. So the holes that he has in terms of his game, I think the Bulls could fill in quite nicely with what they already have. But in terms of his contract, Matt, the $41 million over 3 years, I would say to Bulls fans, look across the board at all the stretch fours and look at all the money that they got in free agency over this last 24 hours. A lot of people overpaid for stretch fours because there was not that many available, and that was like the hottest position right now. Look at Julius Randle. Look at what Bobby Portis got. Those two guys.
Can we talk about Julius Randle for a second and how it was absurd that you thought that there was an outside chance he was coming here?
I didn't think there was an outside chance that he was coming here. I was playing a little bit of nuance.
You certainly seemed very, very, very set on talking about the realism of that report that that there was interest between the Bulls and Julius Randle. And I thought, I said several times on that episode, I was like, I think this is bullshit. It makes no sense. And look at the money the Knicks signed him as a backup player.
Yeah, there's a difference between me talking about somebody that I actually want and just putting a little nuance to it and actually like engaging in the conversation because the report was out there. That's all I was doing, is just talking about the what if that happened. It wasn't necessarily my opinion that I thought he would come here and sign.
So you didn't think it was realistic either?
Mm-mm, no, not that he was going to be a backup here with the Bulls. If I would find it very weird if they spent that much money to have a young guy that should be starting in this league come off the bench behind Lauri Markkanen. So that's why I always felt like that wasn't really a realistic option for them. So yeah, that wasn't me saying yes, they should have, or I thought that he was going to come here and be a backup role, because I didn't. It was just more the nuance of the conversation being able to extend it out.
Well, and you know, also our old pal Bobby Portis, he got the 15-16 mil annual that he was looking for from the Bulls last summer, and what he was reportedly looking for again this summer on a 2-year deal. So, you know, he turned down more money over more years last summer. But I mean, the Bulls getting Thaddeus Young, a savvy veteran that's well-respected and well-liked across the league, who can still bring you solid play on both ends of the floor at, you know, 13 million and change, or Bobby Portis making 15.5 per. I mean, I know which one I'm picking, and it's the older one.
They basically gave Thaddeus Young the contract that they offered Bobby Portis in October. That's basically what they did, right? Like, if you add another year to the offer that supposedly was out there for Portis in October, it was 4 years, 50, somewhere in the early 50s, $50 to $55 million. If you tack on another year to Thaddeus Young's contract, you're right there. You're at $54 million. So that's how I looked at it. It was a shorter term deal. What they wanted to offer to Portis, who he turned down, which is fine. He ended up getting the money that he wanted. But it's on a shorter term deal too. And you kind of know what you're getting in this veteran, as opposed to you don't really know what Bobby's going to be coming off that injury. And he is kind of a guy that's only going to be able to score for you. And you need a player to be able to do a little bit more than that. So good for him. And Taj Gibson too, another former Bull, went to the New York Knicks at $10 million a year. So
the Knicks were like, hey, let's sign all of the power forwards that we can.
I have no idea what that New York Knicks team, and that'll be fun to talk about tomorrow's episode, but I have no idea what they're doing. And you know what? This is what you get, Knicks fans, for coming up with all your photoshopped pictures and tweeting them out for months on end, thinking you were going to get Zion and Kyrie and KD, and then it didn't end up happening.
Photoshops of KD, Kyrie, and Zion. And look, man, and I think this is something I mentioned when I did the Bulls Talk Pod with Mark and Kendall last night. Like, some Bulls fans out there are disappointed because they got their hopes up foolishly that the Bulls were going to be in the hunt for big time stars, even like the second tier stars like Brogdon and Russell. If you listen to what Paxson said, and I know, you know, the immediate counterpoint is, well, Paxson lies to us all the time. There's no transparency. They said younger and more athletic, and then they signed Wade and Rondo. That's true. In recent history, I think Paxson has gotten a bit more transparent when he talks to the media. And he told us, we're going to go out there, we're going to add a couple of savvy, tough-minded vets to come in, be leaders, help the young guys learn how to win, and address some positions of need. That's what they did. Knicks fans, on the other hand, had to deal with James Dolan a few months ago saying, we're getting like a couple, at least one and probably a couple top-tier stud free agents to come here this summer. He basically promised it. And now here's where they are. I know it's not like super exciting as a Bulls fan to think, well, hey, it could always be worse. We always could be a Knicks fan. But when you talk about this constant narrative among the fan base that, you know, the Bulls front office, they lie to our faces all the time. They can't do anything right. Well, all right, you know what? That's bullshit. Sometimes that's bullshit. And sometimes they do the thing that they tell us they're going to do. And in this case, what they told us what they were going to do is actually going to help this team next season in a realistic way.
Two other things I want to get to real quickly, and then we'll get out of here. Our episode tomorrow will be a little bit longer than this one is. And there still might be deals to be had. There's still plenty of other guys out there for free agency to sign. I know the Bulls don't have all that much room anymore, but the one thing that did pop up earlier today is There's a report. His name's Jake Fisher from Sports Illustrated, and he said that the Bulls are actively looking to try and move Chris Dunn, and that's either whether to clear up cap space or just see if they can find any type of value for him. Obviously, they've been looking for a long time, right? We kind of knew this going back to the middle of last season, but we never really heard like a concise report that the Bulls were looking to trade him or actively trying to trade him. Now, with Satoransky on the roster and drafting Coby White over the last 2 weeks, seems like more of a realistic possibility. I still am holding out the idea that if the Bulls trade him, they should get something in return for him. They might not get a whole lot for him, but don't pay somebody just to take Chris Dunn just simply because you don't feel like there's any fit or need here. You can find a place to play Chris Dunn. Just don't do anything stupid with him that is going to turn around and make the Thaddeus Young signing and the Satoransky signing make me pissed off from that. That's where I'm at. Like, if you have to give something in addition to Chris Dunn for somebody to take him on, just leave it, man. Just let him play out the year, and it is what it is with him. But I still think that he does have value out there. We'll see where the rest of the free agents go and what teams really need after pretty much everything's dried up.
I'm very disappointed in myself for how wrong I was to believe in Chris Dunn. At this point, I just want him gone. I think it can create a locker room problem and a team chemistry problem if you're talking about Satoransky being the new free agent signing who, by all logical accounts right now, looks to be this team's starting point guard because of what he can bring and what he can provide for Zach and Lowry and Otto. And then you got the young hotshot kid. You just took 7th overall in the draft, Coby White, who we're all very excited to see play in a Bulls jersey. And yeah, he might not be this team starter, but we sure as hell want to see him playing some real minutes off the bench in his rookie year, because you gotta get that that kid some experience. And where does Chris Dunn fit into that? I know John Paxson said, well, you know, you might see us playing some small ball in lineups where Coby White and Chris Dunn are playing together. And Paxson even kind of backtracking and saying, oh, earlier when I was talking about our core, I forgot to mention Chris Dunn. I'm sorry, I should have mentioned Chris Dunn. That, you know, kind of counter to what I was saying earlier about how Paxson's been more transparent with the media and the fan base recently. That, to me, is still the one where it's like, all right, Paxson has said basically in every which way, we're not impressed with Chris Dunn. And Chris Dunn is not getting the job done. We're going out and addressing the point guard position because we're not impressed with Chris Dunn. But nope, until we officially get rid of him, we're still going to give him a little bit of a carrot here, which I think is bullshit. You talk about wanting to see Satoransky provide all the things that Chris Dunn can't. High assist-to-turnover ratio, being an effective player off the ball when Zach LaVine wants to take his turns running the offense, and being an effective player off the ball when you're trying to get Lowry his touches and his looks. And again, Coby White and giving him minutes and developing him and wanting him to be the primary backup point guard off the bench. Keeping Chris Dunn makes no sense at this point. So I understand that there's some kind of like mandatory lip service until he's gone. But I mean, even still, the other example that we always point to, what is this team's social media accounts trying to get the fans jazzed up about? Hey, look, season tickets are on sale. Look at all these cool players we have. Once again, the most recent example, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Otto Porter, Wendell Carter, and Coby White, smack dab in the middle, not Chris Dunn. They have given up on Chris Dunn. They just haven't found a trade for him yet.
I just don't want them to trade him and then also have to take on other money or anything like that where it's going to diminish what the Bulls are doing here in terms of their flexibility or just having to give up extra. You know what I'm talking about?
I agree with you. I don't want them to do that, but I'm literally trade him for a ham sandwich. Trade him for a second round pick. Trade him for the 60th pick in the 2035 draft. I don't give a fuck. Just move him. Because even more so than the fact that where I don't see he fits between Satoransky and Coby White, I really am worried about the chemistry thing. Because I also have kind of gotten the vibe from Chris Dunn that he can rub people the wrong way. And he has kind of been butthurt recently about how things haven't worked out in Chicago. And maybe there is some sympathy that is owed to him because of that and because some of these injuries aren't his fault or whatever, whatever. But, the facts are the facts. So I don't want Chris Dunn being a locker room problem on a young team that I'm very excited to watch next season.
I have zero concern about that. I have zero concern that he'd be a locker room problem.
Really?
Because, think about what we were talking about.
Based on some of the things we've heard, you're still not concerned about that?
No, not at all. Because think about last year when we talked about, remember that report that supposedly the Bulls were unhappy with Chris Dunn's work ethic at the beginning of the summer. And we were like, that's total bullshit. There's been nothing that has said that he doesn't work hard or he isn't going to be in the gym every single day. So, like, where's the concrete evidence?
And that was a year ago. And now it's now.
What makes you worried or concerned? Because I know there's probably other Bulls fans that feel the same exact way you do. What's out there that would make you concerned that you would believe that there could be a potential butting of heads with the new point guards?
Based on what we've heard, Chris Dunn is not super pleased with the slights he's been getting from this front office in the media recently. And you can't blame him. They've basically been saying, hey, this guy we have that plays this job on our team, yeah, he sucks at that job, so we're going to go address that position and get it better. He has been dragged through the mud by John Paxson repeated times. Most recently, again, forgetting to mention Chris Dunn as part of the core and then like half-assedly mentioning him after the fact. Chris Dunn has every right to feel slighted by this organization right now because, hey, you can't stay healthy. That's not entirely your fault, but give me a chance. I need a chance. I need a healthy season. So, of course, he's feeling slighted. And then he has a new free agent point guard brought in who everybody is looking at immediately as, well, that's our starter. Look at how effective that guy can be getting all of the more important pieces of the starting five involved. That's our starter. And we're also really excited about this rookie we just drafted at number 7 to also play in the backcourt, who, by the way, has the same agent as Chris Dunn. You're telling me that doesn't present any possible friction between those people within the organization and in that same locker room? Come on. Of course it could present problems.
It might, but I just don't want to all of a sudden start putting that on Chris Dunn because none of the examples you gave me came straight from Chris Dunn. That's like what I'm looking for is like, where's the evidence that's coming from him that would make him such like a possible red flag in terms of a locker room problem? Because I can't find any. Even going back to Minnesota, going back to his college days, there is nothing like that. Like if there was a blow up, like, I don't know, for example, like the way Bobby Portis and Mirotić happened, that situation a couple of years ago, or that there was internal struggles between a bunch of guys and
two guys fighting for minutes at the same position.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I know there's a possibility of that happening, but has there been any evidence that Chris Dunn would be a problem with that? Like there would be a problem with that. We haven't heard him say that. Obviously, he had the article that the interview with Darnell Mayberry about a month ago, just talking about some of the things that he was confused and disappointed about his season. And those are rightfully so. Like he was pitched one idea last year, and then things changed when he came back from his injury this season. So I can get those types of struggles, but I don't see anything from Chris Dunn's personality, at least right now, July 1st, 2019, that really screams to me that he would be a problem. Obviously, all the things that you're bringing up, all the examples, certainly make it more possible. But until I see something that happens, I can't put that on Chris Dunn. So, I mean, if you're a professional and you're a pro, you're going to come in. And if you truly feel like you are better than both of the guys that the Bulls brought in, then go out there and fucking show us, right? So maybe that it could be the opposite effect. It could light a fire under his ass and say, you know what, maybe I'm going to go out there and perform better than these guys. It could go both ways, you know?
What I have heard after not only the comments about Dunn and lack of comments about Dunn from the front office and from the coaching staff over the past year or so, doubled by the drafting of one Coby White and the continued lack of talk of Chris Dunn as a part of this team and the continued talk about improving the point guard situation has made Chris Dunn a little bit butthurt. And he's looking for a fresh start somewhere else. That's what I've heard.
And that's not a problem either. Obviously, that makes sense, right? Like if for example, if you or I, we were brought in a third co-host and they started doing podcasts every single day and one of us was bumped off and not getting as much airtime and all of that, it would piss us off, right? We would want to go somewhere else and get a fresh start. So that makes sense. That's like human nature, right?
Who you been talking to? Who you been talking to?
Yeah, we have Stacey King. Stacey King's the new third host to us. So sorry, Matt, but it's going to be me and Stacey from now on.
Heart, hustle, and muscle. I can't knock that.
But yes, obviously, like if I had to put a percentage on it, the percent of likelihood that Chris Dunn is dealt before going into training camp, I'd probably put it at 80% right now.
Yeah, I think it's likely. I think it's happening. It's just a matter of finding a trade. And I know some Bulls fans out there that were asking me earlier today, like, well, if they trade Dunn, they can add a little bit more cap space and some flexibility, maybe sign somebody a bit more expensive for that final spot. That wouldn't really matter anymore. You know, the Bulls between Satoransky and Young essentially used all of the $23 million in actual cap space they have. They still have that $4.7 million room exception slot open that they could use to sign a third free agent. But to me, like there's a difference between that. And if they were to trade Dunn and open up and not take any players back and essentially just take picks or a pick or whatever it was, that $5 million in change that is the cap hold for Chris Dunn this coming season wouldn't really benefit the Bulls in any way because you can't combine it with the 4.7 room exception.
What if you take him, and this is just a quick hypothetical here, and then we'll get out of here. What if you take him and you go to Charlotte and say, you know what, we'll give you Chris Dunn and we'll give you, and you got to take either, yeah, you got to take Felicio. You got to take Chris Dunn and Felicio, and we'll take either that bad contract with Bismack Biyombo or one of their other bad contracts. Would you do that? Like a Michael Kidd Gilchrist type of deal.
Ooh. Slip of the tongue there. Yeah. Orlando signed Michael Carter Williams earlier
today. I don't know how that dude keeps getting jobs, but I guess he's been better since he was with the Bulls. But still, I still don't understand how that dude keeps getting jobs.
401 fast break, never forget. would I be open to that? Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that would make more sense than all these Bulls fans who are clamoring for the Bulls to stretch Felicio's contract to open up a little bit more money to go at, like, to go pay Brogdon or go pay D'Angelo Russell. Like, to me, you're like, that didn't make any sense. Just, like, you know, swallow the hard pill and realize that you fucked up with the Felicio contract and finish paying him in 2 years instead of several years beyond that. At lesser values. If the Bulls had that cap space, say that, you know, as you said, swapped him and sent Felicio over to take, like, you know, would I take back that? If the you know, Hornets were willing to throw a little sum extra, as far as like draft capital and assets, I'd certainly be open to it. And look, I mean, like, there is no more of an organization that is a mess right now. Well, okay, we also did talk about the Knicks briefly, but Charlotte. You basically just did a point guard swap, and you lost Kemba Walker, and you replaced him with Terry Rozier, and you're paying Terry Rozier more than you paid Kemba Walker. Like, that might be the biggest facepalm of free agency so far.
It's too funny to me that they did that, that they overpaid Terry Rozier, which is just absolutely wild to me. But
huge sigh of relief when I saw that, because, like, you know, that name Terry Rozier kept getting attached to the Bulls, and I was like, please God no.
So they could get two Terry Roziers and getting Chris Dunn as well, because I feel like a lot of what Terry Rozier offers is what Chris Dunn has to his game. So maybe there's a deal to be had, but I just, again, want to reiterate this for the third time, is don't trade Chris Dunn and end up having to give up stuff to or take on stuff just because you want him off the roster. I think there's a situation and a scenario where you could bring him back, and there's room for him to play. He just have to prove himself again. Last thing, Matt. How hard were you laughing when Darren Collison ended up retiring instead of signing a contract with the Bulls? Because I was in tears. I was literally in tears. That was the funniest thing I've ever seen, and that is so classic Bulls.
I mean, like, personally... And again, no offense to any of our listeners who may be people of very strong faith, and I have nothing against people who are devoutly religious, and I respect people who have the ability to believe in stuff like that. But to me, the funniest detail is that Darren Collison, instead of signing a pretty lucrative deal to continue playing basketball, said no. Instead, I'm going to go, devote my life to being a Jehovah's Witness. Like, as an atheist, I'm like, wow, that's crazy. You're turning down millions to go knock on strangers' doors and have those doors slammed in your face when you're like, hey, would you perhaps have some chance and some time today to talk about, wham, door in your face? That, like, to me, that's what I think of when I think of Jehovah's Witnesses, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody listening out there, but I mean, talk about a 180 of career and life path. Keep playing in the NBA, keep making millions of dollars, devote your life to being a Jehovah's Witness. again, not trying to make too much light of it and joke about it sarcastically, good for Darren Collison if that's what he's trying to devote his life to doing. But the fact that that's who the Bulls were reportedly planning to sign, and then he said, no, I'm going to go knock on people's doors and ask them to talk about Jesus instead. I was like, yeah, yes, that is great.
Probably thought about the idea of having to be on road trips on the plane, and Gar Foreman's over there drawing up plays on his little napkin. Remember that story from this year with the whole Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade stuff? Is that Gar was drawing up plays on napkins and showing coaches and players? He's probably like, yeah, I don't need to deal with that. I'm out of here. So I was just in tears.
Thankfully, the Bulls at some point over the past couple of years just gave Gar Foreman an Etch-a-Sketch and were like, here you go, Gar. Just go sit in the corner.
I'll give him at least a little bit of credit. The Coby White and Daniel Gafford draft picks were pretty good. So at least he did that job that we needed him to do. And just don't screw up the two draft picks that you have. And it was pretty hard to do that when your best player available and also your player of need were one in the same, both at the first round pick and the second. So, but yeah, I had to laugh. Very excited to see what else is going down to in the NBA. That was just 24 hours of free agent signings, and it was crazy, absolutely crazy. Shout out to you guys at NBC Sports Chicago. I was flipping between. I had two monitors going. I was watching the NBA jumps presentation of it for 4 hours, which was awesome. And so flipping back to you guys when we were getting news about all these other signings. So plenty of NBA content was out there and available. And what a better day to do it than a Sunday night where literally everybody's spending most of their time on the couch. So that was awesome. I hope they continue to do that too. You know, continue to press and push more and more NBA content, not only on TV, but everywhere else, because they see how big of an impact it's going to have.
It's huge, man. Like I said, it's one of the biggest events of the year for sports in general, and certainly one of the biggest NBA days of the year. Jordan, before we sign off, I just want to give a quick shout out. So one of our devoted listeners out all the way in California by the name of Joey happened to be in Chicago this weekend and ran into me when I was hanging out at the Logan Square Arts Festival with my buddies this weekend.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was just sitting at this picnic table with some friends, and I was like kind of incognito, not that I need to be, but I was like, I was wearing a cutoff tie-dye t-shirt, sunglasses, you know, baseball cap backwards. And this buddy, Joey, just comes up to me. He's like, hey, Matt, like, dude, big fan, you know, Locked On Bulls, like Outsiders, you've been killing it lately. And we just had a nice conversation about the Bulls, about living in Chicago versus living out on the West Coast. A devoted listener, and you know, you and I, we love our Chicago brethren. We also love those who tune in and you know, soak up our content across the states and across the world. So it was nice chatting with you, Joey. I had a pleasure meeting you and talking Bulls and talking deep dish pizza. And yeah, man, be well out there in Cali. Hope you enjoyed your weekend in Chicago.
Appreciate every single person that listens to this show. I mean, thinking back to where we started 3 years ago to the point we're at now, you know, when we don't put out an episode, which we've been a little bit off schedule here the last couple of weeks, but I promise you we're going to get back on to regular scheduled programming here. It's been crazy. Like, people have been asking, where's the episodes at? Where's the episodes at? So we appreciate everybody that's really excited every time we drop our episodes. And
give a mouse a cookie, man.
Yeah, for real. So make sure you're subscribed, though. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Himalaya, anywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls, because you get our episodes immediately when they drop. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you guys again for listening. Very, very excited for tomorrow's episode to talk about the rest of the chaos that happened over the last 24 hours. And we'll get in a little bit to some more in-depth about the Bulls stuff as well later in this week. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.